Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going on for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we'll sit in front of our radios and hopefully learn something from each other, teach each other, and entertain each other, and amuse each other, and have a good time. And I thank everyone who has returned once again this Sunday night to do it all over again. As per usual, let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay. The first link, of course, is if you want to contact me, you can't do it on the radio, then you can do it via email. That would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions, those questions that normally would be asked on the technical net, but if you don't have access to the repeater on Sunday night at 8 p.m., then you could email me, and if it's an appropriate question, we could discuss it. You can either listen via an internet stream that we provide, or an archive file of the technical net later on in the week. Also, if you have a topic for discussion, occasionally something pops into the news of a technical nature that one of our participants is familiar with and likes to try and share it with the rest of us, and they contact me and I say fine, and they do a short little presentation on the subject matter. In other cases, it's someone that just wants to be part of a discussion on a particular subject. In other cases, it's people who unfortunately don't know much about the subject but are curious and interested and want to hear other people talk about it. Another reason to contact me email is if you have a technical puzzle. We're always looking for puzzles that kind of stimulate conversation and thought, preferably something that isn't solvable by just Googling it. Occasionally, I will find a TechNet puzzle in which, when you Google it, you get the wrong answer. I really like those. So if you have anything like that, please advise me of it. Or else, another reason would be if you find something NASA or space-related and want to hear what Paul has to say about it, you can either contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if not, you could send it off to me, and I'll refer it back to him. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. What I like to do is cut and paste interesting YouTubes and articles, and I put it on a link. It's called Roy's Link. You can get there by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring it to you any old time. It's up 24/7. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be right back. Okay. We keep a chat room available. It's been kind of quiet the last few months, but sometimes it's downright raucous. A lot of interesting conversations sometimes take place parallel to the technical net on the chat room, and you can get to the chat room by just typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. Earlier I mentioned I provide a internet audio stream of the technical net. I set it up primarily for the technical net, but some people asked if I could keep it alive for the rest of the week, and so for the most part, if you are out of range to pick up W2VL and you have internet access, you just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you an audio stream. And as always, I like to mention MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. He has archived the Limark Technical Nets going as far back as September 2006. And his site is called amateurradio.tv. He has over 1 million visitors, so make it 1,000,001. So those are the links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I got planned. We're going to have the usual going tonight. I will ask for questions and comments and topics for discussion. I would hope that the first few are amateur radio related, since this is a amateur radio technical net. But as everyone who has listened to any of these before knows, I will certainly accept any technical science questions and try my best to answer it if I can. If not, occasionally we have our participants who volunteer, and I'm sure we can at least give you some reference material to look up and learn from. So that should take us to about 10:15, and then Paul, WS2S, will bring us the SpaceNet report until about 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the following week. So that's the plan. If the laws of physics continue and the repeater is nice and healthy and my radio shack is nice and healthy and I'm nice and healthy, so that's the plan. So with that in mind, I will drop for a second and ask if anyone has any questions or comments tonight.
Interaction. I'm radio related.
West recognized. Anyone else want to volunteer for tonight? Well, hopefully as the night progresses, people will return with questions or comments and topics and what have you. And we'll see how it goes. Sometimes it starts quiet and it ends very busy. So we'll see how tonight goes. So, Wes, it seems like you're the first and only person on the list for tonight. What's your topic?
Yeah, practical foil antenna, metal antenna. I sent you the link. I sent you the video. I would appreciate if you say a few words before I start.
Okay. It's an interesting. It was interesting. YouTube. It reminds me of my perpetual complaint. Amateur radio operators should be better at providing audio and just a better video experience than they seem to. It's very, very haphazard. I eventually figured out one of the YouTube was erratic because instead of doing a proper presentation, what happened was some club had some guy presenting his presentation on Zoom, and they were having technical problems, which they didn't edit out of. And so you had 10 minutes of these guys talking to each other, telling each other that the guy who's presenting doesn't hear them. And I don't know. I just wish for a little bit more professionalism from amateur radio operators. But yeah, it was interesting. It was basically a guy who was discussing the nuances of using metallic tape. When last we talked about metallic tape a couple of months ago, it was Rich W2BZ had used it to cover the PVC of his magnetic loop. He did a kind of a solid filling job, whereas in this presentation it was more of a barbershop pole configuration. So it's interesting, it's fascinating. For the most part, the guy who presented it sort of demonstrated that this is more practical for UHF VHF than HF, simply because of the added size weight criteria. It was far easier to do it for 2 meters or 70 centimeters, and I think when he finally showed a model that was designed for HF, it was actually designed for 6 meters, which, you know, most people when they think of HF think of a lot of things, but usually they don't think of 6 meters.
Okay. So we have W6NBC, like NBC, you must know, NBC, right, news station. The gentleman name is John Fortune, average operator. I hear if he's another fellow, I'm not sure if that was K1, DBC, not sure, but there were two individuals experimenting with the antenna. So let's say you guys have a problem with neighbors. We just don't want to be seen as a ham radio operators outside just because of your antenna. Or because antennas are too expensive. You have a number of choices, and I'm going to talk about it. Okay, so let's say we have an oiled copper tape quite oily because when you try to unwind it, it looks like it's wet, but it's not wet. Whatever, it's with paper, but sometimes it doesn't come with paper. It comes like a sticky one side. And similar to that, we have aluminum one, or in European language, aluminium. Aluminum foil tape. So copper is mostly known as Freely Incorporated. That is one of the companies that does it. LPG does the aluminum foil tape. It's called Rubin aluminum. And we can use it for the antenna. Why do we want it? Well, if you have a house and the side of your house has a certain diameter, you can have a written one element cubical quad on a full loop antenna, if you will. The good thing is it's invisible. So if you care about foil has that really shiny look, it could look like an ornament, or even inside the house you could use the moldings, and the molding from inside, from the side that is next to the wall, you could put the tape if you don't want that to be exposed. Let me go for it. Okay, so another way of doing it is you have a pot, like a pot for the flowers, and you can put a helix on that pot. It looks like some sort of spring. It even looks nice, right? So it depends what you're heading for. The 2 meters, 6 meters, or HF band. Now, another way of using that is a slab antenna. I think Dr. Roy may say a few words about slot antennas, because those you can have also done on your windshield, not the back window of your car, if you will, or even the window. Dr. Roy, a few words about slot antennas.
KC2GX. Well, we've talked a couple of times about slot antennas. Dick, may rest in peace, used to talk about slot antennas. This is sort of a fascinating field where they look to you or I like negative antennas, where the radiating material seems to be the cutout portion of a straight sheet of conductive material. So in other words, if you take a long sheet of metal and you punch out, I don't know, about a quarter of an inch, a half of an inch, a strip going across the whole thing with two feet, kind of negative feed lines in the center and such, and you wire it up correctly, the laws of physics will allow that to operate as though it was a proper wire antenna. So the idea is that you can build something or manufacture something out of a mylar that has metal coating for the pattern of the inverse antenna, and you can place it on glass, and it works as a decent antenna. But again, these are things that are kind of designed for high frequency, because if you build something like this for lower frequencies, the weight of the sheet of metal gets to be problematic. So this is a nice design that you occasionally can see for UHF and VHF on windshields and such.
Thank you very much for that. So W6NBC. He had a pickup, and the rear glass of the pickup, he put the slot antenna. He said it was kind of compromised, but it was a challenge, but it was working. Better off it was working, much better. It was working much better when he put it on his door. So we're not talking about the front of the door, because it's very much open, but if you have some door on the side, and you don't, you can put it too. Or even on the, I don't believe that Wall would be the good one for the slot antennas. But anyhow, that's one of the solutions that you could do with tape. Then spirally loaded copper tape and PVC dipole. Mr. NBC, W6NBC and QST from October 2020. He put the article about the PVC pole for 2 meters, and when he wound on it a copper tape, it looks really nice. So let's say you have a fence, it's a plastic fence, and one of the poles could be turned into the antenna if you want. But you can have also an abstracted pole. Doesn't have to be rectangular, it could be rounded, a piece of paper, plastic pipe, and it could work pretty well. You could even make a vertical dipole that is like a 40% of the tall as a J dipole, if you will. He made a clever design. He put the squarish pool made out of plastic, and he put the house for the birds on the top of it, so it looks like something done for the kids. But he wrapped the foil, aluminum foil, on that pool. It's important to know that you have to have a space when you wind it. I'm going to talk about it why just a little later. Now, if you have, many of you, they have agreed. I'm not sure if I use the proper wording. Looks like a grid made out of plastic with the holes, and is often used as a divider in porches. Dr. Roy, do I use the proper wording for that?
I don't know if it's properly called a picket fence, but everyone who ever has seen where instead of open slots, or instead of a solid pane of opaque material, there are slats of wood at a 45-degree angle that interlock with each other. So it's a kind of checkerboard pattern. The gentleman decided to use strips of, I forget if it was copper or aluminum tape, for those slats and configure them into a kind of self antenna.
Kilo Delta 2, Victor Charlie Quebec with a query.
Certainly. Yes, what is your query?
Hey, good evening. Is this Roy?
Yes, this is Roy himself, AC2GS.
Hey, Roy, how are you? Listen, a quick question. I did a volunteer races with the Gold Coast Bike Tour today. You guys, they used your repeater. They used the Limark repeater, the new one, NY2H, I think it was. I programmed the radio, but I couldn't find any specs on it. I couldn't find that repeater on Repeater Book.
Yeah, it's a new repeater. It's not, its call sign is not NY2H. That's Lou, the guy who's the head of our technical team, who controls these repeaters. It's relatively new. I think it went online about 6 months ago. It usually takes a year or two before it gets placed into the repeater book. If Lou's around and listening, if you want to share some of the specs with the gentleman.
KD2VCQ.
Yes, VCQ. I guess lose elsewhere. But it's one of our many repeaters. It's a relatively new one. They commissioned it only, like I said, 6 months ago, and they've been connecting it to different places for a time. It's been linked during the technical net so that people have more options of how to connect to it.
My quick question was, I was able to hit the repeater when I keyed my mic. I did hit the repeater, and then it looked like somebody was responding because the repeater stayed lit up, and I saw the bars much longer, like somebody was transmitting, but I could not hear their transmission. I was just wondering beforehand if you had any idea what might have caused that, where I had what I might have programmed wrong.
Okay, maybe there was a tone squelch on it?
That could be. You don't know. You don't happen to know what that is, do you?
No, personally, I don't. Again, I'll kind of throw it out to the audience. If you're aware what the tone squelch is, my first choice would be try and use the tone squelch that's used for our other repeaters. They're probably just reusing it, but I don't know for sure. But if anyone knows for sure, please hit that push to talk and educate me.
K2SDP.
Yes, Chris.
The Middle Island repeater is the same squelch. It's 136.5, and the frequency is 449.075.
Okay, very good, Chris. So basically, if you didn't set that channel for a tone squelch of 136.5, you wouldn't be able to hear its audio. It wouldn't break the squelch unless it was programmed to recognize that frequency. So for you know, some.
Okay, I did have the squelch set at 136.5, and I had the frequency at 449.075 with a negative 5 offset. So I don't know what there's something else I'm doing wrong because I am not hearing the repeat. You know, whoever's repeating, whoever's transmitting back to me, I see it, but I don't hear it.
Okay, so but you use the right to PL tone 136.5 because we doubled and I didn't hear that part of your transmission.
And the CTCSS/DCS/DEC, I got that set at 136.5, and the CTCSS/DCS/ENC, I have that set at 136.5.
A2SDP.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, I missed the call sign. I'm looking for the info. I know it's NY2H Lou is experimenting with that repeater, so it does go offline from time to time, and he changes things or whatever. And I know about 15 minutes before the tech deck tonight, he did put it online or change to it, so it was connected to the tech net here. So maybe it was offline or something this afternoon. I don't know, but. It is kind of an experimental thing he's been playing around with for a while.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you for that, Fred. Quick question. I got a couple other settings here that I'm not sure of. I have something called W/N, and I have that set on W. The push to talk ID, I have that off. Abyss lock, I have that off. Scan add is on, but that's no problem. That's part of my scan. SIG code, I have set at 6. All the others, I have set at 1, so I'm not sure what the SIG code should be. OptiSug, I have off. SP mute, I have quiet. SCR, I have off.
Okay, I unfortunately, I doubled with you again. I was saying that maybe Lou was playing around with the PL tones. So although you had the proper squelch tone for the usual setting, it might have been some strange situation where it was changed for the Racy's event.
Okay, I understand. That's a possibility. I really appreciate your help, and I'll be hanging around to listen to the rest of your net. 82 VCQ standing by.
Okay, very good. Let's go back to Wesley. I think you were in the middle of something, right?
Yeah, that is correct. So, we're talking about that grid made from that 45 degrees, at 45 degrees grid made out of plastic or wooden strips. So, that foil could be, a few of those strips could be used to have a zigzag, doesn't have to be straight, form of that antenna. Depends what band you plan it to be, and W6NBC used a huge, humongous one. So he had a regular wooden fence, and he hung on it that sort of grid made of strips at 45 degrees each one, and making a small hole in between. But it looks like it was like 20 feet wide and about 6 feet tall. And that was in Hidden Rose Traveler's Foil Tape HF antenna. So that was in the garden, rose garden of his wife. And we are assuming that such a big structure could allow some HF antennas to be built. The interesting thing is that because that sort of grid was mounted directly on that wooden fence, he put that foil from inside between the wooden fence. So when you are in the garden and you're looking at it, you don't see any antenna at all. Okay, so I'm going to come back to building high-efficiency small tape helices. So imagine that you have a regular pipe, a PVC pipe, and you want to wind a regular wire on it. Well, wire has a thickness, wire costs money also, but if you put wind next to the wind, then you have a skin effect. So you have to pay attention to the skin effect if you take to wind it yourself, like a loading coil for the HF mobile antenna or for the HF antenna. So if we wind the wire right next to each other, then the skin effect has a double effect. And not only does it force the current to go outside of the conductor, it forces it up to the top and to the bottom only due to the adjacent turns. So you want to put those turns of that coil not close together, have some spacing. If you follow like 3:1, so let's say the thickness of the tape or thickness of the wire, and then the space is 3 times the thickness, then you're going to probably get more current of that thin wire if you use the wire of the helix antenna. It's just, if we're talking about guys who wants to use a little too much power or a little more power. Okay. So, but of course, if we wind the antenna this way, that we have a space between the winds, then we have a kind of big antenna. And if we try to make a small antenna, like let's say for ham radio operation on the field or in the car, then we talk about the efficiency of the antenna. The antenna will still resonate, but the efficiency will be much smaller. Maybe Dr. Roy could add something to it.
Well, I've done this routine for a couple of weeks with the technical net discussing the idea of radiation resistance and ohmic heat loss resistance. Antennas inherently, all antennas can kind of be broken down to having an inherent capacitive reactance, inductive reactance, radiation resistance, and ohmic insertion loss resistance. And ultimately, you want to resonate that structure where the capacitive and the inductive reactances cancel out each other, and you're left purely with the resistances. And in a perfect world, you would like the radiation resistance to be much higher than the ohmic or heat loss resistance, because The heat loss is wasted energy, and the radiation resistance is the radiated RF that you want the antenna to do. So a perfect thing would be to have something that had an ohmic resistance of 0 ohms and a radiation resistance of thousands of ohms. But we don't live in perfect worlds. Center-fed dipoles usually have a radiation resistance of anywhere around 60 ohms. Magnetic loops that we've mentioned in the past about this have a radiation resistance of something like 1/10 or 1/100th of an ohm, where the insertion losses become very important to determine the efficiency of antennas.
Thank you very much. So we see flash RF, which is the same, blows on the surface unless and uses less of the conductor. So it doesn't matter. Do we have a conductor? Or we have a tape. We still have some skin effects. If I remember correctly, the skin effect is already visible up to in the frequencies higher than 300 kilohertz. Am I right, Dr. Roy?
Well, it's a progression. It is more pronounced as you raise the frequency. The center of the wire has less current riding on it, and the thickness of the conductor, the surface thickness where most of the current flows, is shorter and shorter as you raise the frequency higher and higher. So it's not a binary. It's a very analog, gradual progression. And by the way, I just want to mention that in the old days, we used to have two Canadian IRLP connections to two Canadian repeaters. And for the past 4 years or so, we only had one in Barrie, but the other one, Lake of Bays Huntsville, is back connected with us. So we're back to the good old days where we had two Canadian repeaters via IRLP link. So I just wanted to mention it to the people out there. And certainly, if any of the Canadian guys are listening, it would be nice if you said hello, because we haven't heard from you for years. But anyway, getting back to you, Wesley.
Yeah, on that video, actually, I sent you also the photograph of it, W6NBC. He made the table with the numbers, the skin thickness, two size doubles, depth. Pay attention when you're buying. And then it shows on left-hand side the band, so it's for 160 meters, which is 1.8 megahertz. He recommends 2.4 if you are... your 2.4 gauge if you use the wire, if it's aluminum, but if you use copper, then it could be 1.9. On 80 meter, on 80 meter, I'm not sure, yeah. On 80 meter, which is 3.5 megahertz, it's 1.7 gauge, and for copper is 1.4, so always copper, because it's more conductive, it's thinner. Then 60 meters band, which is 5 megahertz, 1.4, 1.2, and so whatsoever. To the most, we may say 20 meters is pretty much used. So at 14 megahertz, you could use 0.9 gauge for aluminum and 0.7 for the copper if you want to wind the antenna. So we talked about the wire that we winding a helix. Everybody knows, but it may be repeated again why we use helix instead of using the straight antenna, because we want to have it not that tall. So the length of the wire is exactly the same. It's a little bit different because then you have a capacitive reactance and inductive reactance. I'm not sure if that much of inductive reactance is present when you have a 3-to-1 space between the winds. But anyhow, it's a way to hide your antenna if you wish. Pretty interesting for me is, like, if you have a house, you could turn one outside of your outside wall, let me jump, to have a pretty nice loop antenna. Pretty nice. Usually what a house is like 40 feet. Well, house side could be 40 feet by 20 feet, right? Imagine how nice antenna you could have. Do you have previous experience or did you hear about such antenna, Fatoroy?
No, I have not. I know a lot of people who have full-wave loop antennas of different types. I think making them out of metal tape and sticking them to the side of a building is kind of making them more of a compromise device, because there's a lot of electrical conduits and such in the walls. So it would be probably my first best case of making a loop with metallic tape. I guess you could do it, but you know, again, it would be kind of starting as a compromise in the first place. You know, there's a lot of things you could do with metal tape. Again, our own W2BZ used it to clad the PVC of his magnetic loop. There are people who put tape on their windows. Again, more for UHF type of stuff, and get pretty good service from it. The problem is when you start to use it for very large structures, again, the mechanical limitations, because although there are some good things to be said for metal tape, if you're doing something in 80 meters or, you know, 40 meters, it's a lot bulkier to do it in metal tape than to do it in metal wire.
Another idea is if you have an attic, doesn't matter if it's flat or whatever shape it is, from inside you could use the tape, from inside, on the perimeter of it. I assume there would be not much of the wire in the attic interfering with making it. Now, I'm going to repeat that what Dr. Roy said. So, XL and XC, the tuning-only parameters, which is the reactances. But the reactance doesn't use the power at all. So, XL, XC, the capacitive or and inductive reactances, they don't use the power. So, what uses the power, that consumes the power, is RC and... RR, which would be the conductance resistance and radiation resistance that Dr. Roy was talking about already. Okay. So one of the examples is 10 feet, 4 inches PVC pipe, no radials, OCF dipole, 2 inches aluminum tape with 2 inches gap, works perfectly on 25 megahertz, 10 meters and 12 meters. Here we have a pipe with the foil on it, 2 kilowatt power. Now if you used copper instead of aluminum, now you can use 1 inch copper tape. So that would be 1 inch copper tape and 1 inch gap. That will give you additional band. So if you make an aluminum one, you have a 25 megahertz, 10 and 12 meters. But if you have a copper one, not only you have a smaller antenna, but it works on 15 megahertz, 20, 17 and 15. So this is kind of interesting. Just go to the Home Depot and buy the pipe. Right. So it is important to have to remember the tape with the more inductance, the higher is RC. I'm not sure. Oh, yeah. The more, right. So the longer is the tape, right. The longer is the tape, the higher is RC, right, the resistance. The tape spacing, the higher is the inductance, both lower efficiency.
I'm not sure what is the, I have to get to that part. I believe, okay. Radiation resistance consumes CX power to make radio, right. So, we're trying to have the smallest possible antenna, the most effective one. So use the copper tape. Now we got in here to that screenshot. When making an antenna smaller with a coil, pay attention to the resistance. Right, that's what they were talking about. And ways to change frequency, tape width, tape spacing, both lower efficiency. I'm reading from the screenshot, from the video. I think Dr. Royum may want to put that video on his webpage so everybody would have an access for it. If you are interested, you may also Google practical foil metal antennas by W6NBC, NBC like radio. Okay, I believe that's all that I can say about it. Interesting, because in my house I have 36 feet long, or maybe 40 feet long, and about 18 feet wide roof and slot. So instead of lifting that antenna where the building is that particular building is quite tall, I would simply put the tape around the perimeter, even outside, and have a quite good antenna for HF. Yeah. Dr. Roy, N2XGS.
AC2GS, I think most people would rather use a piece of wire. It's more easily chosen, comes in all kinds of different types. You could buy pure copper, you could buy solid, you could buy stranded, you could buy a copper-cladded steel, you know, a whole bunch of different options. You could reuse wire that you already have. It's lightweight, it's easy to manage, it's reusable. I think 9 or maybe 99 people out of 100, rather than going for the copper tape with adhesive on one side, and, you know, they can get expensive, you know. Those rolls aren't that big, so it could be expensive, and you can't reuse it. And you always have the problem, at least in my mind, of what's the best way to attach it to a circuit with the least amount of insertion loss. You know, with wire, it's very simple. You can solder it. You can't really solder tape, so you have to put some mechanical clamp and worry about corrosion and other things. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing to play around with, and I think John Fortune kind of presented it as an interesting, quirky little thing. But he also pointed out that all of these ultimately loaded, shortened, radiating antennas are inherently less efficient than large-size antennas. You know, his presentation, I think, at one point ended with sort of, well, you know, you're not getting very efficient use, but it's better than nothing. So that's an interesting way to sell a product.
Well, I'm not that sure if this is the case in Trixian, because if you have a quite nice wall, you could do a lot of things with it. Of course, you could use the wire. We don't have to use the tape. If you want to put a wire around the perimeter and you have a vinyl siding on the house and those vertical corners could cover the wire that could go just be put underneath of it between the siding and the corner, now you have two vertical sides. The only way you have to do is make sure that horizontal one on the top of the wall is somehow attached. It's easy to do, put a few screws, if the house is wooden, a few screws, and it's going to probably align, and then try to tune it. So I'm not sure if it's always a compromise
As far as the callers, Hustler is one of the companies that use those whip antennas with the coil, and then you put, you to use the screw on the top of it or put and twist some sort of whip on it. You could use it as a portable antenna for your handheld or for your mobile. But the easiest way, if you don't want to do anything, put a sheet of metal. Put a sheet of metal on your roof. Sheet of metal, 5 feet by 5 feet, and in the middle of it, put that mobile antenna, multibinder, whatever, you have it. Better than nothing, like Dr. Roy said. You have your radials. Yeah, because a sheet, flat sheet of metal could be a foil. Could be a foil, actually. Doesn't have to be a sheet of metal. That could be a foil that is just on your roof, right? Is serving as a counterpoint, Dr. Roy.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. You could use any conducting sheet. You could be thin enough to be called a foil or thick enough to be called a sheet. Probably, all things being equal, I'd rather use a sheet than a foil, because with the foil you have to then have another problem that you find a solution to. How do you tack down the foil so it doesn't blow away with the wind? So, you know, rather than have to deal with screwing it to your roof on all four sides, probably best to weigh down a relatively inexpensive piece of sheet metal. You know, I've told people in the past to use cookie platters, whatever they're called, to when you're baking cookies in the oven. I've told people to use their magnetic mobile antennas on their outside air conditioner, or if you don't have an outside air conditioner, put it on your refrigerator in your kitchen, and if the house isn't terribly shielded, you might get away with it. So, you know, there's all kinds of compromises out there. And, you know, I mean, using metallic tape is an interesting one. It's not a terribly popular one from what I'm aware of, but it certainly does exist. And, you know, I think John Fortune's thing is that he's an antenna guy, and he just likes to try every possible permutation of antennas, and I think that's the spirit that he presented that talk, because at the end he said, if any of you guys do anything with this tape, let me know, because I'd like to know about it. So I don't think he's going to spend a great deal of his future time playing around with tape-related antennas. You know, he writes a lot of different antenna articles on a lot of different things. He was cited a few times when we discussed magnetic loops. You know, he's one of those guys who just loves antennas and doesn't mind spending hours upon hours upon hours rigging things up and testing them out. You know, he's less of a theoretical guy and more of a practical guy.
Yeah, two things at the end of it. J-Paul, Global was ham radio guy, and I was able to get somewhere, his ham radio antenna, trying to find if I have it open. So the guy who was dealing with surface wave with the G-Line, Global G-Line, you could Google in Wikipedia, this guy was ham radio operator as well. Was kind of surprised, but certainly it was interesting. Okay, I'm trying to see. I should have it open. Also, there is another guy, N6GN. The N6GN was the guy who was also playing with sending energy from point A to point B, but I'm not going to go through it. This guy, N6GN, is active and still playing with it, but he also made a series of articles with ham radio antennas for ham radio operators. And, okay, propagation, no, not this one. Okay, if I have this open. So, that's another guy
new methods in power. No, that's the power monitoring. That's not that. And anyhow, I cannot find it right now open. I have too many pages open, but it was interesting, design. There was all band antenna that was designed by that guy. So if I find that, then I will just say a few words about it. Anyhow, it popped on my mind that if somebody has the fence were around the house, so usually the lot is like 25 by 100. How would the antenna work if on the top of that of that fence somebody could doesn't have to be wire, but let's say the wire, right? The wire all in perimeter, it doesn't look obvious. It doesn't look like something strange. And put the wire on perimeter, how would that work as an antenna? Back to you, Dr.
AC2GS. It would be an interesting one. Probably it wouldn't be quite as good as if you could raise it up a bit, because it would probably have significant near vertical incident sky wave characteristics. It would probably tend to be a cloud warmer more than a DX type of a loop. You know, usually when I hear people talk about loops, they're putting it up on their roofs, where at least you have a little bit more elevation above ground than a fence would provide. So you have a little bit less of that NVIS going on.
Okay, I found it. We have Glenn Elmore, N6GN, and we have his colleague, John Vantouros, K6ZPB. Those guys who were dealing with surface wave, they made the publication. It's not like some sort of blog, it's an official publication. All band antenna. In this third article on the surface wave transmission line theory, an application for use by radio amateurs, the authors described a single antenna for the 160 meters to 3 meters band. Wow. I say wow. Okay. So again, I repeat, 160 meters to 3 centimeters band. And there is a design for this antenna. I can send it to you. It's everything that you need, with all of the information, how to build it, with the schematic, with the Smith chart, and how it resonates, with the pictures, how it works. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Hey, C2PL.
Yes, Jeff recognized. I just want to add a question. This probably sounds more like a traveling wave antenna than a standing wave. But, Jeff, what would you like to say?
Every time Wesley talks about something that he's excited about, he says there's a publication. Where is the publication? Who are the referees? What's the impact factor of the journal? Questions like that always pop into my mind. Wesley.
Thank you very much. Most of the time, the link for the publication or scientific publication is sent to Dr. Roy. But what I'm doing right now is I'm copying the link and I'm sending it to Dr. Roy. He's going to have a few seconds from now. Hold on.
Keep in mind, a lot of these articles can go as far back as 1910. So keep that in mind, please.
Well, those two guys are alive. Ham radio amateurs.
Sometimes when I'm working in my field and I have to translate something from German that was published well before World War I, I'm keeping it in mind.
Okay, those guys are alive, both of them. They're ham radio amateurs, they are active. I've checked the licenses, they're still active. At least I checked the license of Glenn. So, Roy R., okay, I have it, and I'm sending it Hold on. Paste. Send it. Okay, I did. You should have it now. One of the links he made at publication in plenty of places is one of the links that I have open.
Is this a standing wave antenna or is this a rolling wave antenna?
Did you open it?
Yes, I opened it. That and read an article simultaneously.
I've got that link like a few minutes before the segment. But this is one of the links. There is another link also that is related to the G-Line, Global G-Line. And, by the way, hamcall.net and qrz.com, I've checked those guys. They are active. So I'm not really going to tell you more than it's in the article, but if you don't mind, feel free to comment on it, as I didn't have a time to read it yet, and I'm going to find another link also. Back to you, too.
Okay. When someone suggests something that sounds too good to be true, it's usually because it's too good to be true. And the way he presents it is it goes from 160 meters to 3 centimeters. Not even 3 meters, but 3 centimeters. So it sounds a heck of a lot like too good of a deal, so there's got to be a gotcha. My initial idea of what the gotcha is, that this is a traveling wave antenna design which are known to be incredibly inefficient. So, you know, you'll get some degree. You won't get reflected power because most of it will be used up as waste heat. So 0.0001% of the energy might actually turn into RF, but, you know, a mismatch is almost meaningless based upon an SWR meter that only detects reflected power when you have a high-loss system. There's some very popular antennas that have balans that soak up about 95% of the power, and they're advertised as being very broadband because you never get reflected power because it all gets burnt up in the balance.
AE2ALD with a question.
Certainly, please ask the question.
By the way, can you give that link to the gentleman because he asked where is that article? Detroit.
I don't know what you mean by where's the article. Someone wanted to ask a question.
I forgot the call sign. The gentleman before me, he asked, but every time that I say there is a publication, where is that publication? What is his call sign?
That's Jeff, AC2PL.
Yeah, so the Jeff asked, where is the link? Could you give that link to Jeff?
Well, it's not a scientific article, by the way. It's an article in QEX, which I think when Jeff was kind of describing citing articles, he's talking about professional articles, where QEX is an interesting article for technically minded amateur radio operators. It's not really the same thing as major scientific journals or electrical engineering journals.
I looked at the black print a few minutes before the technical. I was trying to prepare myself for talking about the antennas, and for me it looks like an article which is 2012. November, December 2012, QEX, and reprinted with permission by ARRL. Now, I saw the article also in a few other places, so I take your word. I don't know if it's scientific, if it's not. That's why I couldn't comment on it. But since Jeff was interested, where is that? It looks like that article was pretty nicely done with all of the illustrations and drawings, and tables. I let him just take a look at it and get conclusions by himself. All he needs to know is where to find it. Back to you.
Well, for Jeff,